The following program is a PodcastOne.com production. Recorded live backstage, this is Geffen Playhouse, unscripted. Now, here's your host, John Horn.
Hey everybody, I'm John Horn, and today on Geffen Playhouse Unscripted, we're going to meet with Carly Hughes. She has done a ton of shows on Broadway. She is also an American Housewife on ABC. She has a great story about her first job on Broadway. She didn't know she was going to go on till 2 hours before the first curtain. So stick around. Carly Hughes on Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday to us. That's right. The Lady Aang podcast is turning 100. We have laughed, cried, giggled, unfiltered through 100 episodes, and we want you to join us for our 100th birthday extravaganza. We're looking back at all the best moments, the funniest moments, the best advice we got from our 100 guests, and we want you to join us. So come find us on Tuesday, and you can find us exclusively at PodcastOne.com or the new Podcast One app. And don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts so we can feel famous.
Now back to Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
So we are here with Geffen Playhouse Unscripted, Carly Hughes. Welcome to Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
Thanks, guys.
How many podcasts have you done?
I mean, not a lot. I've done like...
Wait, was that a podcast voice? I want to hear that.
I mean, I've done like... I should put that on every time I do a podcast. I think I've done like 3 podcast interviews. That's it.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm new to this.
You're not virginal.
Yeah.
We won't go there, but just in terms of podcasts, how are you?
You got it. I'm great.
You know, something we have not talked about on this podcast, but I was really intrigued by driving over here because I've been thinking about it, is the understudy. And playing an understudy and the psychology of an understudy.
I know that well.
You know your lines, you know the play, and you never want bad mojo, because karma's a bitch, right?
You're correct. Karma's a bitch.
But at the same time, like, it's like, what would happen if... So what is the mindset of an understudy?
I mean, it kind of depends. It depends on the type of person you are. Some people love covering and love being able to go on at a minute's notice, but also hate that anxiety that comes along with showing up to the theater and, am I going to go on tonight? I don't know. She said she was sick yesterday. She has a cold. And then there's other people that can just take it with a grain of salt. You know what I mean? But for the most part, you learn the show, your track, because an understudy is different from a standby. So an understudy is in the show, understudying whatever part. You learn the show, which means you learn your track, you learn the part you're covering, and then, you know, by happenstance, you learn all the other parts around you.
Because you're just there.
Yeah, well,
and
you have to know, when you're understudying, you have to know, okay, he says this here, that's normally her cue to do that, so you just happen to be learning the whole show because it ends up being your cues. And you pray for the best, but it depends on how long the show runs. By the middle of the run, you're like, can I go on tonight, please?
Right. Well, because there are some great stories. I think of Sutton Foster, who understudying Thoroughly Modern Millie, right? And I don't know if the lead got sick or what happened.
Mm-hmm.
She got called,
mm-hmm.
and that was it, right? Mm-hmm. That was her swing at the plate. And
Took
she
it
went
and ran.
And went with it. So is there a secret part of you that says maybe if they got sick just for one night, you don't want bad luck to happen, but...
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I feel like with anyone, everyone's always looking for their chance to shine. And while you... I know for me, I'm always grateful for the part. There's still always that side that's like, also, I could be playing this part. And
well,
so you battle... You know what I mean? You battle with trying to live that truth while also being grateful for the job and while also not being crazy walking around, you know, with a stank face. While not wishing anything bad on anyone.
No, but that's the other part of the equation, right? That you are doing the show and you know that that person who is in the lead isn't quite good enough or isn't as good as they think they are or whatever it
and
is.
And at the end of the day, you don't know with casting. You never know. A lot of times it doesn't have to do with talent, in which case you're like, what the? And other times it's who you know, and other times it's politics and she's done this or he's done this and so we think he deserves this right now. You know? It's everything that goes into it 9 times out of 10 that's not talent related. So
it's not a meritocracy is what you're telling me. You're shattering my dreams.
I mean, a little bit.
But there are people with less talent who know the right people, maybe have a great audition, maybe somebody owes somebody a favor, and then But do you think ultimately the cream rises to the top, yeah, even if it takes a while?
In my experience, yeah. I mean, I started from the bottom, so I've witnessed a lot of people, and I've witnessed my own journey and struggle and all of that, knowing and practicing patience the whole time of my time is coming, my time is coming. It's like it becomes a mantra.
Now, would you say that you have more patience than most? Because there are limits of patience, and there's limits of, you know, how long you can take it, and things happen at the pace they're going to happen, and you can't really control it, and it's the undoing of many an actor.
I want to say yes and, like, seem amazing, but I think I have more practice patience than most, if that makes sense.
What's the difference?
Meaning, I know how to be patient and get the job done, and I also know how to go home and vent to my best friend and release it there. So, you know, I'm patient when it comes to being at work and on the job, and then I get home and be like, why is this happening? And why is that? And because you need some sort of release at the end of the day.
Right. At what point did you realize that ensemble wasn't going to be good enough for you? Because there are a lot of people who
it's kind of
the opposite side of the same coin of the understudy. There are a lot of people who are incredibly talented, and they're going to be in the ensemble. They are the 20 feet from stardom backup singers. They're going to be just off to the side. They can sing, they can act, they can dance, and for whatever reason, they're going to be ensemble, and they're not going to get recognized with a Tony Award because there is no Tony Award for ensemble.
Best ensemble. Yeah,
and they
not.
Do incredible work. You can look at the ensemble of Hamilton, any great show. Mm-hmm. The show can live or die by the ensemble.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, early on, I like to be challenged. My brain works so fast. I pick up things really fast, and the ensemble for me was a starting point, and I knew that. And it's not not looking down on it, but there are stepping stones. And for me, in my mind, as Carly, it was a stepping stone, knowing not this is not for me. I can't stay here.
Right.
But I also have friends that love it, like really love it. And I actually envy that, because there have been times when I've been in the ensemble going crazy because I'm like, this is too easy, or I'm not working hard enough, or
But I think that's something that if you recognize in yourself is important, that there are certain people who are going to love that work and they're going to love being part of the company. And there are other people who have to be downstage.
Right.
They have
and
to have
like
a spotlight.
You have to recognize it and then do something about it. Or you don't recognize it and you become one of those brats that complain about it constantly every show but are not working towards getting to the next step, whatever that is for you.
But the other thing that you can do if you're understudying or you're in the ensemble is you can observe. And you can observe what it is that somebody who has got a lead role is doing that you can learn from.
I've done that from the beginning.
Where would you say those experiences came from? And do you remember some of the actors or performers where you were kind of in the wings, in the shadows, and you said, okay, I see what he or she is doing. Mm-hmm. Here's what I can take from that performance and bring it to my own career.
Yeah, I mean, there have been tons of things along the way, but Broadway in particular, my Broadway debut was Putnam County Spelling Bee. Thank you, James Lapine. And it's like a 9-person show. You're on stage the whole time. Well, Rona Lisa Peretti's on stage, and Marcy Park was the other one that I covered. And I watched them like a hawk because it was my Broadway debut. I was nervous. I woke
up. And what part were you playing?
I was a standby for Rona Lisa Peretti and Marcy Park. And by happenstance, our stage manager was on vacation my very first day, Welcome to Broadway. And they're like, just watch the show. We'll teach you the rest of the show when she gets back. Right now, the assistant stage manager is going to just like go through some blocking for Marcy, but we'll teach you the rest for that week. The week passed, and the first day that I actually took over, they're like, so how are you feeling? And I was like, I'm fine. I'm not sick anymore. They're like, that's great. You have to go on. And I was like, I'm sorry. And I had to go on for the part that we did not learn.
You have how much advance notice of this?
A couple hours. Of not learning.
You don't know.
Well, I don't know the show. I've never sang it. I never, because I was sick and the PSM was on vacation and the girl that I was replacing was still there that week. So they were like, next week, you're here to watch this week. Next week, you'll start.
And she got sick or something?
They were like, and don't worry, she never gets sick.
Oh,
this
famous
cast
last
never
words.
Gets sick. And I was like, great. Bronchitis. I was on 7 out of 8 shows that week and I had no rehearsal. I had no, except for they called me in at like, as soon as I could get there, like noon, and we rehearsed. We ran the show until showtime. We had 7 o'clock shows.
Have you done fittings? Had you had wardrobe? Nothing.
No. I think I came in for a fitting, like to be like, this is what you'll be wearing. But like nothing had like taken place. And I had been looking at all the Marcy Park stuff. So point being, I watched the show that week and my brain's just different and I pick up fast. But I also had an inkling. I was like, I know they said to watch Marcy, focus on Marcy because she played the piano and tore the baton and did the splits. But I was like, but I'm going to look at this too, just because after 3 days I looked at Marcy. So thank God I watched Jennifer Simard every night for a week, because she is how I got through my Broadway debut and that whole entire week of just like her professionalism and how she handled the role. That particular role is on stage all 90 minutes. She runs the show.
Yeah.
And so by watching her, I became like, I feel like that was the step into being a Broadway professional, because I was like, well, balls to the wall. I have no, you know, I have to do this now. I have no choice.
So what was it like coming off stage? I know what it's like going on stage. You're probably thinking a million things, but to do it without a lot of preparation, do you remember what it was like walking off?
I don't remember, because I was terrified. It was like, and at the time, Mo Rocca was playing Vice Principal Panch, and so he's like comedian extraordinaire. He's feeding me jokes, and I think the audience was laughing at me because I was just saying them statically because I didn't know what the jokes meant because I was so like frazzled. I don't remember it. I wish I did, but I don't, because I was just focusing on one, putting one foot in front of the other.
And this is an interactive show where the audience gets involved,
too. Oh, yeah. And I have to like lead the audience and guide them on stage. And the cast was amazing. There were a couple times where they all like gracefully, you know, unnoticingly to the audience, pushed me to the right spot. And, you know, they were amazing. I do remember that. But walking off and me going, my very first time on a Broadway stage, I can't remember, because I was just like terrified, but also like on the grind, getting the job done. Because in my head, I was like, oh my God, they're going to fire me because I don't know what I'm doing.
But if baptism by fire is one way to go about something, to do it that way and to come out on the other side alive.
Yeah. And then ever since then.
Not you would ever wish it on anybody else.
Oh, I would never wish it. But since then, though, ironically, that has been my go-to for almost every show that I've covered in. After I left Spelling Bee to do How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and it was a special contract. We did 15 shows a week.
It's insane. That's unthinkable.
It's unacceptable. We had like three
to four
shows.
Do you even have a day off?
We had one day.
Or is it because it's a kid's show that's 90 minutes?
It's 90 minutes. We still had one day off, but we did like three and four shows a day. And we were not double cast like the Rockettes. And so the year we did that, the last year.
And you're singing.
Singing.
You're belting.
And dancing and wearing Whoville, whatever. And that was the last year was on Broadway, 2007 or 8.
I can look it up. Let's see.
Yeah, I think it was 8. 2007 into 8. We rehearsed. We opened November 2007. But it was the year of the stagehand strike.
November 9, 2007 to January 6, 2008.
Ah, look at my memory.
Performer Carly Hughes, citizen of Whoville, understudy Carly Hughes, Mama Who.
So because of the stagehand strike, they shut Broadway down, except for five shows, one of them, which was Spelling Bee, which I left. And they were like, why'd you leave that show? So we go to court. The producers go to court and say, hey, we're on a special contract. It's a seasonal show and blah, blah, blah. The judge is like, I will not be the Grinch. We reopen after 2 weeks. And the lady playing Mama Who is sick, because we had been standing outside marching for 2 weeks. And she's like, I can't go in. I had to go on 7 shows in 2 days. No rehearsal, because you know when they went on strike, our opening night. So there was a no rehearsal.
This is worse than Spelling
Bee. It's worse. I mean, luckily it was the Grinch, and like everybody kind of more knows that story.
So what is the first show where it all worked, where you got cast, you had rehearsals, you had, you know, dress, everything was smooth on Broadway, where it actually
where I had a moment.
You had a moment to get ready, to figure out what it was you were doing and not be thrown
to the fire. I want to say Pippin, but I was thrown to the fire kind of in that as well, because do you know that story? Yeah.
Remind the Pippin story.
I had rehearsal for Pippin, and I had costume fitting and dresser fitting, but I had 7 days to learn Pippin, 2.5 hours on the trapeze, and I had to do double duty with Beautiful. So
You're doing Carol King show.
Yeah.
And rehearsing for Pippin.
So I'd rehearse Pippin 10 to 6 during the day. And Beautiful has 7 o'clock shows almost every day. So I'd run to the 6:30 half hour from rehearsal at Pippin on 45th. I'd run to 43rd, do Beautiful, wake up the next day, rehearse Pippin, Go do beautiful.
And for people who don't know, when you say run from 45th to 43rd, you mean this. There's not a car
that's taking
you. You are actually running.
No. There's no car service. I am literally
running from
peace
one
out,
backstage to the other.
Running from one backstage door and running through tourists because it's in Times Square, getting the, I got it down.
Out of my way.
Yeah,
I got a show.
Like, excuse me. Focus. Stay to your right. Your right. Not mine. Yeah. And I'd get there and do that. And I mean, I did have rehearsal. It was just like, you have 5 seconds and then you go on. I literally don't know any other way.
So at a certain point, when this is something that probably from a very early age you dreamed of,
yeah,
and you're in the middle of doing this craziness, did you ever say to yourself, what was I thinking? Because obviously you're working, you've got jobs that every actor in America would want.
Exactly.
And yet it's got to be killing you because it is a very hard life.
It's hard. And you feel like, well, you start feeling guilty because you can't complain. I'm like, in the moment, I was like, I cannot complain because I'm literally doing two Broadway shows at one time. No, I think like Cynthia Nixon did that and maybe one other person. So I can't complain. But I was also aware of the physical and mental and emotional, you know, madness going on. And opening my first night on at Pippin, and I've told maybe like three people this ever.
Four.
I get to the middle of the show, and we get to Glory, which is the big number, war number in the Manson Trio, and there I start it, and then I go behind the curtain and let the acrobats do their thing, and I sit down, and my dresser's there. She has the fan. I look at her and I'm like, I need my inhaler. I don't remember the last time I had an asthma attack on the stage. Yeah. And she gave me the inhaler, and mentally I started to like want inside. I was going, oh my God, I can't do this. Oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know if I can make it. Outside, I was like, it's all good. I'm great. Can I have some water, please? And then I was like so calm. But in the inside was the first time I ever felt like, oh my God, can I get this done? And that's just because I had never worked that hard at one time, and the last 2 weeks caught up to me.
But I think what you're describing is something that all the acting training in the world doesn't prepare an actor for, which is the life of an actor. So you might know how to do your audition, mm-hmm. you might know how to do sight reading, you might know how to do, you know, dance, you might know how to figure out a character.
Yeah.
People have different paths in. But the idea of managing not just a career, but managing the moment, managing yourself, taking care of yourself.
And knowing that you still have 18 miles to go.
Right.
Because we were only in the middle.
It's not taught.
Yeah. And so you have to figure that out. And I will say I am grateful. That's one thing I learned along the way from watching all the pros and, you know, like Billy Porter and Lily Swite and all the shows that I've done with who are now – those people are now friends. But entering and watching them and seeing – how they work and how, okay, this is where he is in the middle of the show versus the end or versus the beginning, and just unconsciously knowing that I was paying attention and picking up the process. You know what I mean?
So now that you're doing TV, mm-hmm. it seems probably manageable in comparison.
Yeah, it's like 10 times easier, which sounds so
and
awful
pays
to say.
10 times more.
Exactly. Well, this is such
so
is
that's
life.
100 times the difference.
Exactly. I know my cast members are always like, so what is this like for you? Are you just like, is this too easy? And I'm like, I mean, no, yes.
Yes, but I didn't say that.
You know, it's a whole different world, and you have to know different tricks of the trade. But like TV and film, there's a cut and there's an action. You know, a Broadway show 8 times a week, 2.5 hours, there's no cut until the curtain goes down. The action is curtain up. So it's definitely different. But, you know, all of that prepared me for here. And I'm like, oh, okay. Give me all these lines. I'll memorize them in 5 seconds. I'm good at that.
And like, what?
I know.
Like, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking with actor Carly Hughes. I want to ask you a little bit about growing up and about the people that you saw on stage, the shows you might have seen as a kid, where you saw yourself, where you saw a future for yourself and somebody that you recognized doing a show. Do you remember what that was and who that might have been?
Yeah. I mean, growing up, we were not a family that could afford to go to Broadway or even knew like the concept of Broadway. I grew up between St. Louis and Columbia, Maryland. And I didn't see my first Broadway show until high school, where our dance company took a trip to New York, and that's the first time I'd ever been to see Footloose, and that was my first Broadway show, and I was like watching Stacey Francis, like, I could do that. Like that was one of the first moments where I was like, okay, so that's people do this and they get paid for it. Oh, that's me. But prior to that, I spent my whole childhood in Maryland going to the Howard County Public Library and renting I found a musical section, and I was like, oh, I remember being in fifth grade going musicals and not really knowing, oh, that's the thing that I saw on the TV. Got a bunch of VHS tapes of Stormy Weather with Lena Horne, who a lot of people don't know. They're like, that's the song. And I'm like, no, it's a musical. And luckily they had all of those. And That's Entertainment, you know, that compilation.
Sure.
They had That's Entertainment 1, 2, and 3.
Those are like old MGM musicals,
exactly.
Right?
And they just had a compilation of all the Anchors Away. Me and my mom watched Seven. All the classics that I watched.
So Astaire and Kelly, mm-hmm. I mean, and the great choreography, like
yeah.
Hermes Pan. I mean,
exactly. Gene Kelly and Bing Crosby and all of these greats of watching. I mean, that's essentially how I learned what it was and what it meant and knowing Broadway from that perspective, but not in real life until high school.
You need to write a letter to this library.
I do.
Because
they know they got
that is a
through.
Librarian's dream, that they have
An
brought
impact.
You a world that you didn't know existed and in many ways
absolutely.
gave you your career.
What I know,
a lovely
absolutely.
Story.
And because of that, seeing all those VHS tapes, and once I got into school in Maryland, fifth grade and middle school, I sought out opportunities of like, oh, you guys do a school play. Because again, I didn't even know that existed.
And this is where Robin Hood comes along?
Yeah, Robin. How do you even know that?
I know what you did in fifth grade.
How
We're not
even
going to talk
that?
About sixth grade.
Oh my God. How do you know that? Fifth grade was
You are blushing.
I know because it's...
It was a good production.
It was that was my first ever like do a show. And I remember my music teacher, Miss Alice Serbach, who is amazing. I used to walk to school. I lived down the street. And she would be like, Carly, come in and let me come in before school. And she would just teach me songs because she heard my voice and saw something in me, which I will forever be grateful for. And she said, okay, we're going to do a school play. And I was like, okay, what's a school play? Okay. Signed up for it after school. Robin Hood. She's giving out all the parts. And she's like, naming Maid Marian. And I was like, oh, I thought I'd be Maid Marian. I'm not Maid Marian. All the, you know, Merriman and all
Friar
that.
Friar Tuck.
Yeah. And so she gets through everyone. And I was like, oh, well, I guess I didn't. And she goes, and our Robin Hood is going to be Carly Hughes. And I went, huh? Because I was also like, you know, fifth grade, you don't know any better that you can do whatever you want to do. You're told it, but you don't think it.
Well, and sadly, it changes for the worse once you get out of school. It's
yeah,
like, you know,
yeah.
Can we have a black woman playing
Robin Hood?
No.
Can you have a black woman playing most things? And no. And
right.
You're like, oh, but Alice Zerbach said I could. And we did that. And I just remember not necessarily feeling the high of like the audience and they're clapping for me, but I remember specifically feeling the high from being on stage, having learned these lines and performing them, like basics, just performing them and feeling good that I had practiced it and it got out. The like having an audience didn't come until later, but like that, I mean, for me, that was life changing because then from then I went to middle school and high school and we had a musical theater class in high school and at Wild Lake High School, it's one of the best performing arts high schools you can ever go to. It's not labeled a performing arts school, but they took care of us. We had a concert choir, a madrigals, a beauty shop, a musical theater class, an acting class, a dance company. I mean, jazz club. I sang for jazz band. There was everything there.
And you did all of this in 3 years, right?
You know everything. I did. Well, because...
You just couldn't be stopped.
I get antsy. I told you I'm a fast learner and I'm always like, more, more, what next? And I remember loving all these things and thinking, huh, I wonder where I guess I got to find something to major in when I get older in college because how do you do this? Because I hadn't yet gone to Broadway. And we took that trip. We saw Footloose and a classmate in passing mentioned her sister was at Brigham Young University taking MDT at the time. It was called Music Dance Theater. And I was like, Spidey senses. What is that? She was like, well, it's her degree is in music, dance,
right.
theater. And I was like, oh, literally went home that night, decided what was going
to
happen.
Don't want to go to Brigham Young.
Yeah. Don't want to go to Brigham Young. And decided to graduate a year early, not because I'm like super smart, but because I was like, no, I want to do this. And I took classes at the community college that summer so that the next year was my last year.
And then you went to Penn State. Is that right?
Yeah, I did.
So there are not a lot of schools that have that. Michigan has one. Penn State has one. There are not a lot of schools that have a musical theater program.
There are now. Tons.
There are now, but maybe.
Yeah. I was originally going to go to Syracuse and Carnegie Mellon is a great one. And the other thing is I didn't know a lot about it since I was graduating early. I'm also first generation to go to college. So I was just like, I mean, my parents were excited, but also like,
So what does that mean when you're first generation going to college and you say to your folks, I'm going to be an artist. I'm not not going to be a doctor. I'm not going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be on Broadway. Ugh, it's like, yay, we're glad you're going to college.
But my dad was always like, great, sure, whatever you want to do. It also means, like, in terms of guidance and picking the right program for me, there wasn't a lot there. So, you know, I probably should have stayed at Syracuse, in my opinion. But my mom, for the first couple of years, would be like, I'm like, I got all these grades and I got all these classes. And she'd be like, great. Now, where are your real classes? And I remember thinking,
these are my real classes.
Rude. And I mean, my dad was always just like, listen, great, do what you got to do. And my mom was always supportive, but she still, for like the first 2 years, was like, but what are you going to do in case? What do you need? What are you going to fall back on? And there's always an in case. And I did my first professional show at a theater in Pennsylvania, and they drove down to see. It was Little Shop of Horrors, the first time I ever got paid for it. A summer after my freshman year.
You probably remember what you got paid too, right?
Yeah, it was like nothing. It was like $350
a week.
Yeah, I don't even.
Better than some summer stock.
I know. Well, I've also worked with some others that weren't that. So okay. I was like $350, hallelujah! And they came down and saw it, and that's when she really was like, "Oh, she's good." I was like, "I've been trying to tell you the whole time."
Did you have siblings?
I do. I have a younger brother and two little sisters. Well, none of them are little. I'm the littlest, but they're younger.
Are they artists as well?
No. I'm the only one in my whole family.
Wow.
I know. Crazy.
So did you struggle once you got out of school, or did things come relatively, I won't say easily, but
no,
quickly?
No. I mean, I struggled, you know, mentally as you do, like an artist, and you know, my own struggle, be that as it may. But I started working in college doing summer stocks on purpose to learn, because, you know, the best way to learn is to actually do it. So I was one of the few in my class that would actually every summer go and work. So by the time I graduated, I had two jobs lined up. I did a Dreamgirls at Arkansas Rep and a Dreamgirls at PCLO. And I closed that weekend, went home for 3 days, and then went straight to New York and just started doing more regional, because I had already had the audition process down. So if I wasn't on Broadway, I was always doing regional theater. And then I did a lot of regional, and then Spelling Bee came along. Grinch. And then a lot of downtime. And that's the
really?
Struggle. Yeah.
Even after doing two shows at the same time.
Yeah. Well, a lot of after Grinch, and then that was 2008. And then I think I did a bunch of regional and ups and downs until Ragtime, which was 2009. And then went into Ghost, but there was some lag between there. And then after Ghost, it was like, okay, I can calm down, because then it started to be back to back to back. But and that downtime was rough. I remember times of being like, I don't have rent this month.
Wow.
Even though I just worked my ass off, I can't pay rent. You know what I mean? Or I can't buy groceries because I paid rent. Or, you know, I've definitely had lots of those times. Or my unemployment is not the max. It's right. 182 a week. I remember getting 182 a week to live off of.
But I'm not going to go out on a cruise ship. I mean, is that basically,
yeah, no,
that's the Rubicon that you won't cross?
For me, yeah, I was
yeah,
like,
I think it's for a lot of people. I can't do a cruise ship.
And I also don't tour. And there have been times when a couple of tours have come up over the past.
Why don't you tour?
I it never interested me. I love traveling. But I also was like, no, I'd rather do it on Broadway. I don't want to go travel just for me and do that. I just never wanted to. And that meant I turned down a couple of jobs because of it. But I've been so strong-willed forever. And I was like, if you're going to make a decision and you want to get to point, you know, B, you have to be strong in your point A and the choices you make in between.
We talk a lot with actors who do film work, and they talk about what they learn from film directors. It could be David Fincher. It could be Steven Spielberg. But what do you learn from stage directors? Because a stage director's job is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
He or she is managing something that really has no direct comparison in film or television.
Yeah.
But in terms of performance, in terms of singing, in terms of dancing, in mm-hmm. terms of acting, what have the directors that you have worked with given you that have made you a better performer?
The directors, I mean, like, and the choreographers, because essentially they are directors in their own right. The greatest gift I think they've all given me is the gift to create. And I think oftentimes, what I find sometimes in TV and film, it's not about creating, it's about doing what's in front of you. You know what I mean? And then making that creation its own. On stage, you actually get the gift to create something that has never been done before, that you don't have a map that you have to follow. And
even if it's a revival.
Even if it's a revival, because I did the Ragtime revival, and Marsha Milgram Dodge was adamant about making it our own piece. You know, we did the original play of Ghost, and Matthew Warchus was specific about each and every one. And that was the first time I think I worked with a director that approached the ensemble as well and said, I need to know what your ghost died from, why, and why you're still around. And we were like, yeah, yeah. And then he was like, okay, so let's all share the story. And we were like, oh, that was for real. Because it adds to the show as a whole. So I'm just grateful for those moments where I have been able to create something magical and for myself and for the audience that's essentially seeing it for the first time, because you don't always get to do that. Sometimes you step into a role and they're like, no, we need you to hit point A and point B right. and do exactly what she did, because that's how it works. And it's not about you. It's not about you creating. And I've worked with some great people. Diane Paulus did that too with Pippin. She made even the people that took over when I took over. She's like, so I need your story about the leading player. And I was like, huh? I don't have time. I'm doing two shows. And she's like, I know. I need your story. and still made me have a story and a background and do this little performance piece that she made everybody do.
Because the audience knows.
You can tell.
The actors that you're sharing the stage with know, but most important, the audience knows mm-hmm. if you are that person
yeah.
or if you're pretending to be that person.
Yeah.
If you're listening as that person or you're listening as the actor.
Yeah. And I think the directors on Broadway have a difficult job in politely reminding us to be honest and real, because there is no edit. There is no cut. So they can call you on your, BS per se and be like, uh-uh, I know what you're doing. And we can't go back and fix it. You have to do it now. And you have to be real now. And you have to give this performance now. You have more of a grace period and leeway in TV and film.
So how do you figure out the kind of lifestyle work balance? Because one of the things that TV does give you is mm-hmm. a better lifestyle.
Yeah.
And yet actors who have done Broadway or off Broadway, they miss it like
nobody's business.
Like a crack fiend misses.
I do.
You know what it is.
I'm like, I wake up scratching my arm. Like,
so how do you figure out that balance? And how do you figure it out so that it's satisfying on a personal, professional, and economic mm-hmm. level? Because they're all intertwined.
They're all different. You know what? To be honest, I'm still figuring that out. I was in New York 15 years. I've been here in LA filming for a year and a half. And, 15 years in New York, 9 Broadway shows and a million regional shows later, working on Housewife, they're two different worlds. And I am the type of person I have learned from being out here that I need to perform and I need to have that theater. But I also am grateful for this opportunity and the experiences out here, because there are things that doing, American Housewife has afforded me that I would never have been able to do in New York, like simply being able to go home for Christmas or afford to go home
right.
or afford to, drive my car. I mean, it's not a fancy car, but like I've never had a new car in my life, and I just leased one, and I was like, what is this thing called leasing? What is this you say? I can have this and drive it off the lot? So I think for anyone and for myself, the balance is reminding yourself to be grateful and that this too is another stepping stone into something else. And the times where you don't feel challenged or you are having a down day, you go reminisce or you find somewhere, which is difficult in LA to do, to perform or sing a song, but, you fill your spirit in other ways or get crafty and get creative until the next opportunity comes along. Because it's very easy in any situation to wallow
yep.
in the, oh my God, but I'm not this and I'm not that and I'm not this. And, give yourself a moment and have the moment so you're recognizing it. And then you have to pick it up, because otherwise then you're not doing your job for what you're here to do for the TV show,
And people who haven't seen American Housewife, how would you pitch it to them? Why should they check it out?
American Housewife, it's so funny. It's like, I like to call it, there's the family, the autos, and then there's the band of misfits that are us, which, none of us fit into the Westport community per se, but we all make it there because we stick by each other. It's a tell it like it is show. We say the things that you think. Katie Otto, her character mainly does it in voiceover. Sometimes she says it out loud. My character, Angela, is always the one that's like telling you how it is.
And Ali Wong's character.
All three of us. We're just like, nah.
You're the Greek chorus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we give you a taste of living this life as best we can in this community that we don't fit in per se, but we're making room for ourselves. And I feel like we do that every day in our lives, all of us, is we make room for ourselves. You have to make room for yourself.
Great words.
Thank
Carly
you.
Hughes, thank you so much for coming on Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
So
we could talk for another hour.
I know.
But we're not going to.
Oh, thank you. This was fun.
Thank you.
We'll talk again.
That was Carly Hughes on Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. And if you like what you heard, you can check out past episodes. And while you're enjoying more from Geffen Playhouse Unscripted, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or at podcastone.com. And always remember, don't forget to rate, review, and share. I'm John Horn. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Download new episodes every Wednesday at podcastone.com, on the Podcast One app, or subscribe at iTunes.